everyone, and welcome to the Talking Cybersecurity Podcast, the podcast where like-minded individuals talk about all aspects of the cybersecurity industry, including events and people employed within it. My name is Richard Herron, and I produce Talking Cybersecurity Weekly into 40 or so countries around the world. All the opinions you hear on Talking Cybersecurity are my own or those of the people we speak with. They do not necessarily reflect the opinions of my company or the companies my guests represent. The podcast is recorded with Audacity, hosted on Podomatic using a Rode Podcaster microphone. The intro and outro music is from Pixabay. Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Talking Cybersecurity Podcast. This is Richard, this is episode 51, and this is Saturday, December 16, 2023. Today we continue talking cybersecurity with Lue Gishesh from Spartan Security. We left part one on a bit of a cliffhanger, and we'll continue today, and next week we'll complete our discussion with Lue with part three of the episode. But today is certainly part two. Christmas is coming up. If you haven't done any shopping already, now could be a good time to either start it or finish it. If I had the money, I'd personally and selfishly buy some very expensive golf clubs I saw in a golf shop today, but alas, I'm no Tiger Woods. Talking of golf, I had my first win against my friend Paul last weekend. I'm playing him again tomorrow morning, so he'd better watch out. Hopefully I can report back next week with the news that I've beaten him 2 weeks in a row. We'll see. Ah, the cliffhanger at the end of episode one. Ah, the suspense is killing me. Okay, let's get into part two of the discussion with our friend Lue Gishesh from Spartan Security. I hope you enjoy the ongoing discussion.
So they have done everything, and of course they do use
this awareness training. This is sounding like a really good story at the moment. I'm thinking, what could possibly go wrong with this story?
Okay, sorry to interrupt you,
but I'm really intrigued. I'm really intrigued because it sounds like all the boxes are being ticked here.
Yes, and I will tell you what's the box that they didn't untick. So we came into the network. We plug in our own laptops to the network, and we started attacking various services or servers. And then when we start finding our way through our domain controllers, we started generating attacks very, very identical to attacks, to attack pattern that attacker will use. Now, you would expect that all those tools and bells and whistles would generate a lot of alerts, which they did. And you would expect those tools to rate those alerts as critical, which they did. And you would expect that the security operations center, the third-party service, will pick up the phone and call the customer and said, "The sky is falling, somebody inside your network, act now," which
they
didn't.
That's what you're paying them for, so you're paying them for
that. Which they didn't.
So they didn't.
What happened, actually, this was this week, and we did investigation yesterday, and we saw all kind of alerts generated on a CM tool called Microsoft Sentinel. Yep. All of them were rated as critical. And all those traffic patterns were matching the attack that we're doing. So we saw the system generating those alerts. What we failed to see is that the SOC operator or security analyst who was responding to those alerts, he looked at them and closed them and said it was a false positive. Why he did that, I absolutely have no idea. Are they here for one job and one job only is to respond to those attacks? Yes, of course. Are they going to get fired after this breach? Of course they get to get fired because the IT manager called me today and said they are going to get fired. They just don't know it yet.
Interesting, because I was in Perth yesterday, Thursday, and I did another podcast interview with a very technical guy that I'll call John. And we were talking about this exact issue. And I was saying to him that my title, Chief Information Security Officer, so the CISO, C to me sometimes toggles between chief and cynical. I'm relatively cynical about SOCs, and the alerting and maybe the alert fatigue. And we saw that in, I think it was 2013 for the Target US breach.
Yes, absolutely.
So many alerts coming in, they got fatigue, oh yeah, whatever, whatever, and they just don't respond to it. So are we not fine-tuning our SIEM rules properly, or do we not have the right people in our SOCs, or a combination of all the above? Or
I think combination of the above. And here's the danger of having ineffective SOC. You, as a CISO or IT manager, or even like a business owner, you will have a false sense of security.
Yes.
It's just like hiring a security guard or putting a security camera in that inside the house, assuming they will tell you when things go wrong, but they don't, or they are not working, or they are not effectively monitoring the right place, or they're generating so many alerts or buzzes on your phone and then you decided to mute them off. That false of sense of security. The guy, the IT manager told me today, you know what? I'd rather not have a SOC than have one like that, because taking apart the side that they are ineffective and they're not being doing the job they're being paid to do, everybody in the business says, we're good, we have a SOC, which is the most dangerous position you can be in, because everybody, somebody says, if something would happen, somebody will call me. And they didn't call them, then it's no news is good news.
Do you think some organizations get greedy and they take on as many customers into their SOC as they can? So, for example, I'll make this up. A SOC could be monitoring 50 organizations at once. No wonder you're not going to see the alerts coming in. And there's that. And I'm also thinking, are the SOC analysts potentially lowly paid? So they go, oh, it's just a job, I don't care. And they don't care too much? Or I mean, I'm sure not every SOC is like that.
Sure. Look, there's an element of that, and surprisingly, you mentioned the number 50. That particular SOC operator or SOC provider, they have 53 customers from that same industry vertical, which they're monitoring the alert for. So they do get greedy, and they do underpay their staff. But the problem, the core problem that I see here is that the SOC operator is not trained to recognize that when you see these kind of alert, this is an attack. It's good to rely on what Microsoft or what Splunk or what any other vendor will tell you that this is an attack. But if you have experienced those yourself as a, being part of red teaming or doing pen testing, you know if you see a package said responder, you know that responder is a tool that's commonly used by attacker, or Metasploit, which is another tool used by attacker. So if you see a sign of something called responder or alerts have the word Metasploit or Hashcat or any of those, you know that that is not a business. I don't see any business purpose of that attack. So even if that alert was rated low, I would pick it up and say, hang on, something is not right here, because there shouldn't be anybody running responder inside that network. Otherwise, they are up to no good.
Yeah, throw in Mimikatz and Cobalt Strike and we've got a bit of a problem there. That with me, I was talking about the title size, I being cynical information security officer, and I'll lead the witness here. But by all means, I'm sure if you've got a different opinion, please provide it.
Sure.
I'm quite cynical and cynical. I don't know if cynical is the word, tired, one of these words, one of these adjectives, with third-party risk management. So in industry, every organization gets them now. They get 1 to 2 requests a week from customers. Fill out this questionnaire and you look at them and you go, you know, isn't our ISO 27001, SOC 1, SOC 2, and every other accreditation under the sun, isn't that good enough? We'll give you all that documentation. Surely if you've got any other questions, we're happy to answer them, but surely, you know, accreditation should be enough. And then I think about things like, I remember there was I won't mention the company name, but in 2017, at the end of 2017, there was a company that had a data breach. They had every tool under the sun, and if you'd given them a questionnaire and had every process under the sun, if you'd given them a questionnaire, they would have come up trumps. 100 out of 100, we've got everything. And as a customer, you would have walked away and thought, they'll never be breached. Well, of course, they were breached. So I'm wondering how good are these?
The balance.
Yeah, and like, just, so what if you say tick, 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 we've got all those things? Does that just, do I think, oh, you'll never be breached? Now, I know that's not going to happen. We're all probably going to be breached one point in time. I just wonder, why do we go to so much, especially banks do this, they have big teams, do these third-party risk management activities. Why do we put so much time and people into this third-party risk management? Is it just a tick a box to say we do third-party? I know I'm interviewing yes. you, not the other way around, but what are your views on third-party risk management?
Look, most times I see businesses like banks sending those questionnaires to their suppliers because they want to be seen to be doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And they want to say, hey, we manage the risk. We ask those questionnaires. They're the one who will get breached. Therefore, you can't blame IT for it. That's the first root cause of the problem that, in my opinion, that IT or security are doing it just to clear their back so the business won't come and blame them, says why supplier X has been compromised and you didn't tell them they're risky. Now, on the other side of the fence, business who receive those questionnaires says, okay, I'm receiving 2-3 questionnaires a week. Let me go and do the ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliance and get these customers out of my bag. Where they didn't understand or where they didn't realize ISO 27001 is risk-based approach to the organization. And in that context, organization is the provider or the supplier of the bank in this case. If you put that in reality, let's say I supply service to the bank, which I don't. If I go and show ISO 27001 certification of my business to the bank, it means that I, as a supplier of security, do a risk-based approach to the risk to my business. What is important to understand that if I, as a supplier of security, don't see that using complex password or multi-factor authentication risk to my business, I don't have to do it. Because that's not a risk to my business existence. And this is the thing that sometimes using your certification on a face value says, supplier X provided me 27001, therefore they're good. It's not really good enough. So it's really kind of hard question to answer. So, should I then not trust the ISO 27001 and not assume that they're not doing the right thing? No, you should not. You should assume that by using ISO 27001, they are actually serious about security. Yeah. Is their security good enough to meet your business requirement? That's then you need to go and dig slightly deeper. You're not going to need to send them 20,000 questions to answer on top of 27001, but you need to understand that is their risk profile equal or better than mine? If it's better than mine, good. If it's equal, also is good. If it's worse, then that's something I need to manage.
Because I'm thinking, if we all agree on that premise that it's not a matter of if but when, so if we all assume that we're all going to be breached, one side of me says, well, I'm going to ask all these questionnaires, but the other side says, well, I might ask Louis a question, and he says that, I'm making this up now, of course, we don't have a thing called endpoint detection and response. And then I'll go, hold on a sec, there's something that you can help us with. Can you implement that? Because if you have a breach, there could be a flow down effect to us. But just I do that, I say, I've looked at the questionnaire, the way you have no EDR capability, can you please put that in? And you'd come back to me and you'd say, hold on, mate, we're a small privately owned company. That's going to cost, I'll make this up, $250,000. I can't justify that. I don't think there's any way, unless it's in contract, that I can force my third party to put that in. So... Right. Yeah, I don't know.
So the thing I throw back at you, Richard, without necessarily answering your question, is before you start third-party risk assessment, I always tell my customers, before you start that process, you need to have the end result in mind. What are you preparing to do about your risky vendors that you identified through a questionnaires or audit or whatever process? You identified 5 risky vendors. What is the steps that are you prepared to take to manage those vendors? Are you prepared to terminate them? Maybe that's a managed service provider that has been in your business for 10 years and it's so tangled in the business that you can't even think about untangling the process. Are you prepared to go to procurement and say, don't do any future purchase order with that business because it's risky? Are you prepared to put it on the risk register? Are you prepared to put a letter to your board and say, these 4 suppliers pose a significant risk to us? and therefore we need to do something about it, or then let the board deal with it. These are the things that we must answer before even we go to the rabbit hole of, let's create a questionnaire, or what question should I ask? Do you have encryption at risk? Do you have EDR? Do you have monitoring? Do you have CM? Do you have 24/7? Okay, what if they don't? What are you prepared to do with that information as a business? Yeah. Is something that you need to get the business buy-in on it. And then it's up to you, Mr. Sarzo, or you, Mr. IT manager, to decide, how am I going to know if this business poses a risk to me? And those were the question then come second.
And I think that's the key, because I'm glad you added that bit, because I was going to say to you, hold on, let's go back a step. Why are we doing these third risk management questionnaires? Surely it's to determine, I'll say, my comfort with the risk level you're throwing at me. So if you said to me, we've got no controls in place, then I don't have a very big appetite for no controls in place, and I wouldn't be happy with that.
But what if I was the one mowing the grass in your business? Let's say I am a contractor in your business and need somebody to come and clean your, I don't know, furniture or mow the grass. And you ask me a question about if I have endpoint detection or if I have the latest and greatest OS running on my computer or my phone that I used to book and charge you with it. Yeah. What if I am that user and says, look, I don't have any of those?
Well, I'd do a pretty quick risk assessment. And if I saw that you didn't pose a risk to me, which then reminds me of that great story, sort of chop and change, but reminds me of that great story of 5 years ago when that Las Vegas casino got breached because they used this fancy thermometer in their big aquarium that was connected to the network. Someone hacked into the, what do you call it, the thermometer thing in the aquarium. And from there, they got into the
Las Vegas. And Sony Breach got hacked by the teams who maintained the air conditioning system. So the famous Sony Breach started from
that was Target.
Target?
2013.
Target was the point of sale. Target, they installed a malware on point of sale, which maintained by a third party.
Yeah, that was a HVAC company heating the air conditioning, but I'll take your word on that Sony one. Hey, you mentioned the magic word frameworks. So I've been in security for over 20 years, and I'd say for my first 15 years, I don't need frameworks. Frameworks aren't gonna help me. But then a light bulb moment I had when I discovered NIST. I was going, oh, I like this NIST thing. I like this. What are your views about security frameworks? So I'll throw a few magic words in there. You know, ones that you may or may not have used, or ones that your customers have asked you to use. It could be NIST. It could be Essential 8, which sounds like Essential 9 now. 27001, 27002 that you've touched upon. What's your view on frameworks? It's something you'd typically put in place if you're starting up a security
activity. Like you, I'm a fan of NIST. Firstly, let me ask a question generally, and I can give you more specific. Without a framework, it's like building your house without a guideline of rules of the thickness of the wall and the floors and whether you need double glazed or single glazed windows and isolation. So frameworks are essential to tell us what do we need to do. And in that case, I'm like you, I'm a big fan of NIST. And the reason I favor NIST over all other frameworks is very simple. NIST reflects your status in 5 plain English categories. Identify, protect, detect, response, and recover. Doesn't matter if you understand IT or you have absolutely no clue what cybersecurity is. When you go to your business CEO and say, you know what, John? Our protection capability has been rated 1 out of 5. We need to be at least 3 to be in good shape. Suddenly that common language resonates with that person. Whereas you started talking to them about what ISO 27001, the ISMS and the correction methods and corrective action and nonconformance, you lose them in 1 second.
And
that's why I love NIST, because it does resonate with the non-technical people. So you can at least relate to that and represent your status or scoring or whatever you assess your NIST status is to the non-technical people, and suddenly they understand it. They understand you are nearly good or you are so bad in this domain.
And boards actually understand it. As you said, keywords, identify, protect, detect, respond, recover. And now they've thrown in the 6th one, which is governance, which was
a new NIST
one that they needed all the time. And that's beautiful. I do love NIST. Yes. I really do. And it's,
yes.
you know, it's all those magic words. It's sort of auditable yes. and repeatable mm. And all Absolutely. Those sort of things.
And one thing I just want to comment about sure. NIST versus Essential 8. Adopting Essential 8 and adopting NIST is not either either. It should be and.
Yes.
NIST tell you what do you need to do, what process, how those processes should be maintained. It doesn't tell you how you should configure your technology to protect yourself. And that's where the descriptive controls such as Essential 8 will come and tell you, patch your web-facing application every 2 weeks, and if there's something critical, patch it every 48 hours. Patch your internal facing application every 4 weeks. NIST doesn't tell you that. ISO 27001 doesn't tell you that. Essential 8 or 9 tells you that.
Yep.
So therefore, those should be to come in hand in hand. Should not be either either. The other thing I want to mention, Essential 8 is essential. Just the start. If you need to have a comprehensive how to implement your security control, go to ASD Top 35
yep.
controls, because Essential yep. 8 is only 8 out of those 35. You can get a how to configure a network and your controls to protect yourself. You still need the NIST overarching governance to tell you what you need to do.
When I was in Perth, I think it was last night, actually. In fact, it was probably about 24 hours ago. I was talking to, I won't mention his last name, but he'll know who he is, Chris from Western Australia. And we were talking about the Essential 8. And by the way, the reason I called it Essential 9 is because they've sort of started talking about incident and detection response capability. And one thing he raised was, how up-to-date is the Essential 8? Because he said, because one of the hardest ones I've always found hard to get it even to like a level 1 status, let alone level 2, is the one all about macros. And mm-hmm. he was sort of saying to me, how relevant is that now? How many macro exploits do you see? Because I remember 15 years ago, on macros, we've got to protect macros because, you know, exploitation mm-hmm. and all that. Is that a common thing now? I wouldn't have thought so. Maybe it is. But do we, whoever we are, do we need to revisit the Essential 8? Is it really covering the Essential 8? Or do you think it's covering most of them, if not all yeah. of them?
Look, I think it's good that you mentioned the example of macros, because I think if today I sent you an email with the malicious macros and you have no other controls between my sending and your mailbox, and you execute that macros, then you are in trouble. However, yeah. like your business, most of the businesses do have a malware protection and do have endpoint detection and response, you hope, and you have security events monitoring. What I think Essential 8 failed to understand is there are also more essential things that you need to have on your computer, such as endpoint detection and response. You can't assume if I disable macros and patch application everything, but I didn't fail to mention that there is need to move from traditional antivirus to endpoint detection and response or behavior-based response, then you are really putting yourself in a very big trouble. So no, to go back to your question, no, I don't think they cover the essential. I still think the thing that they cover, the eight areas that they cover are really, really important, but they miss a lot of other stuff, such as the need of endpoint detection and response, such as you need the malware protection on your email to filter all those things. Because if you think about attack vectors, they always started from either email, somebody soliciting your emails,
yep.
you plug in a USB, or you're visiting the wrong site. Usually those are the attack, or if somebody malicious inside your network or inside your business, that's a different story. But when I target you, these are the attack vectors that I go with.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because you think about all the stats we look at in those journals that come out, and they talk about human factor is between 85 to 90% of data breaches. Surely one of the Essential 8 controls would be security culture, security awareness, security education.
Absolutely.
Because we're the ones who click on the links. We're the ones who let the guy through the door because he's got his hands full. We're the ones who, yeah, all those sort of things. Sure. Yeah, it's interesting that awareness, education, training, culture is not part of that Essential 8.
Absolutely.
We could be starting something here with you. Away.
And absolutely, but the thing is with awareness training is not a good way to do it. That's the problem with this. You can't go and say, if I send emails, phishing simulation emails every month to my users, and if they click on the link, I punish them by asking them to follow a 4-minute video link, I'm good. It's never was that simple.
Yeah.
yep. with a human.
And as I've heard on other podcasts, and I remember I was having a conversation at ASA with Daisy Wong, and she said to me, I could have been B-sides, and Daisy Wong said to me, they can be aware, but do they care? You know what I mean?
Yes.
There's got to be something, what's in it for me? And geez, if I click on that, I could bring the whole company down. I could lose my job. Geez, this is interesting here. Maybe I need to be more up with it. I wanted to now move in, because we've been talking for 45 minutes. We might have to split this into two or three episodes, but I've actually really enjoyed talking to you and where this is going. I'm going to ask you probably what people would consider some soft questions. And that is, like, you're in cyber. What do you find most... And at that point, we'll end part two of the three-part discussion with Luay Gishesh from Spartan Security, and we'll continue it next week for the final installment. Until then, I hope you all get through the last week of work before the Christmas break. I've got a really tough week coming up, especially Tuesday, but that's life in the fast lane. Speak to you all next week. Have a good week. Bye.